right, this is May 21st.
Second.
May 22nd, 2019. And this is collective bargaining at the University of West Florida with the University of West Florida chapter of the United Faculty of Florida and the University of West Florida Board of Trustees bargaining teams.
We'll go around. We usually turn.
Okay.
Kim LaDuff.
Mike Vannamore.
Jamie Sprague.
Dan Lucas.
Chastity Hobbs.
Daniel Pace.
Justin Davis.
John Fink.
Tom Wasler.
Okay. When we last met, we discussed, I think, all of the articles that were outstanding. I've confirmed that as a part of our strategy to refer certain articles to our upcoming full book. We will do that with the conflict of interest article that we open to. So I think we're down to two articles.
Salary, benefits, and Article 3.
Okay.
Yeah. And we have responses for everything on the table. Was there anything, did you guys have any other updates or anything else that you wanted to?
I guess there were, the only thing that I would say is that you raised three issues having to do with the inversion. Yeah, there's two things I would like to say. You raised three issues with regard to the inversion compression initiative that we put on the table. One was, what happens if there's only one hire during the relevant time period? Can that be the standard instead of the average of two? And we're okay with that. You suggested that we use department slash unit as the population for comparison as opposed to discipline. We can live with that too. And the third was to, I think,
it's offset SPE.
Offset SPE is excluded. We can live with that too.
Oh, okay.
So the other thing is, we're, and I know that you've had you have a request for kicking out another across the board increase in an outlier year, and some other wage increases to clarify our position. We're not in a place right now because of the unsettled nature of our budget, and probably won't be for a while, to be able to say whether we can do that or not.
The outlier, okay.
But maybe that's also something that can be revisited when we get back together in the fall and we have a clearer picture of our budget.
Okay. And no definition of what 100% means?
I don't. Oh, yes. I didn't have the answer. Both of your questions, I'm told, were answered in an appearance before the Faculty Senate.
Okay.
And the people who were on leave, the Faculty Senate was told, in answer to the same questions, that the people on leave would be not expected to attend graduation for the purposes of the 100%.
Okay.
And the monies is monies that go to the department to underwrite department and faculty support activities.
Okay, good. So that mirrors our position.
Yeah.
On that. So, well, great. Good. Okay. Okay. Well, we have this is a packet for everything on the table.
Okay.
That's open right now. I genuinely think we're getting close together. I think that we should be able to move. Yes, I have enough for everybody. Exactly right. Okay, so for salaries, we've made some changes to our proposal and incorporated some of the things that you guys have also provided. For the bonus, we have set that as a strict $500 bonus, right? Set bonus that would go out to all in-unit faculty in December. This is rather than the percentage bonus increase. This would give a and it's kind of nice to set it around the holiday break time as well. One of the things that, we message the entire faculty and a lot of my back on this. And so I frequently receive messages back from faculty saying, where's my bonus? I didn't get my bonus. And I always say, before you pop off an email, look at your paycheck. You've got essentially three consecutive paychecks. And so, do you usually get three consecutive paychecks? They said, no. And so I said, one of those was the bonus. And so then they say, oh, okay, thanks. So having it as like a set time, also around winter break, is beneficial. We've included, prior to your clarification, the CPIU increase for 2020-2021. That's something that we can look at again based on the information that you've provided. We've still included that additional 1% to round for the associates and above, to round off making up for the increase that went up previously, when that went up from, this is the final 1%. But we think this is an especially appropriate time to do that because in conjunction with the inversion piece that's set in, this 1% given now, as I guarantee the university will see with this additional 3% that we've given previously, is going to offset the inversion increases, right?
Okay.
Sometimes when you have raises go out simultaneously, the question is which gets applied first, right?
Right.
You know, and so in this scenario, the percent would be applied before the inversion, right? Rather than vice versa. We're fine with that structure, right? So it would offset inversion rather than being in addition to an inversion correction.
Okay.
But there's a population of faculty who aren't inverted, but are still that 1% down, right?
And so, okay.
We have still included the associate, bringing in the associate clinical professor and clinical professor ranks. We believe this is a really good time to address this. As we've stated previously, the tension over the simultaneity of a multi-year contract structure and a promotion structure does not exist for these assistant clinical professor positions, right? They do not have access to that multi-year contract structure. And my understanding is that these positions are designed or intended to have promotion connections to them.
Now, if you could remind me, Jonathan, what's the history of these positions? I know that I know this came up and it was an issue that I wasn't really directly involved in. I think some other people at the university were more actively involved in these positions were created?
These were created a couple of years ago. How it came about, they were initially created as a functional path to address some of the structure of the types of positions the university wanted to hire, right?
Okay.
And I'm sure you're familiar with sort of the clinical professor heading itself from the other universities, right? When they were initially created, they were given the 9003 position codes, right? Like the standard assistant professor position codes. That was an issue I brought to the university because the contract says assistant professors are tenure eligible, right? And so at that point, if you remember, that's where you got involved and created the position codes, not personally created, but through the process of creating the position codes of the 97 something something for the clinical assistant professors, right? So they've been in those position codes probably, what, it's only 2 years, maybe? It's about that time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So about 2 years. Now, the position, we did not have to bargain position codes, right? Like that was one of the conversations we had, I think, in consultation. So following that model, the university could create these position codes, associate clinical professor and clinical professor, independent of collective bargaining, right?
Okay.
You don't have to do that now. At the time, we currently only have a position code for assistant clinical professor. Like the university did not petition PERC to create those three levels initially, but there was nothing that would prevent the university from doing that.
Okay.
Doing that now. Go ahead.
Is there a need to go to PERC in your perspective? And if so, who does that fall upon to take those steps?
That would fall on the university.
Okay.
And this is, that's the procedure that we went through last time.
Okay.
The university reached out to PERC, right, Tom?
Right. And it's a UC petition.
Okay.
Yeah.
And since the parties are in disagreement, as you know, Mike, it should be pro forma with PERC. Yeah.
Okay.
And additionally, part of this proposal is, and the reason it's somewhat time sensitive is it's easier to do this now when these faculty are early in their careers, because they're going to have that window is going to shrink the farther we put this off.
Okay.
Right? And then that makes it more complicated.
So, okay. So everybody in the clinical professor rank right now is an assistant?
Yes. Yeah. They're all assistant clinical, to my knowledge. Amy Zant?
Yes. We don't have any associate or clinical professors right now.
Okay.
And they've got about a 4-year window ahead of them
before they can apply.
But right now they can't apply at all. But under this, right, that they would apply. Also, that we were saying.
Let me ask you this: if we were to do this, mm-hmm, I'm just curious about, because I don't know where these people are at and how we're dealing with them. But what people's expectation would be if we were to include associate clinical professor and clinical professor in 25.6. Would there be people who could apply next year, or would they have a waiting period before they would apply?
I would imagine it would be the standard 6-year waiting period, right, that you would have. And now we could sign an MOU that says something to that effect, right, that this would, they would, these promotions would first be available in a specific year.
Okay.
Like we would be fine doing something like that.
I got it.
And the additional element, we're not proposing that we define that promotion criteria in the contract, right? We're saying follow this. We already have the promotion article. The same way that tenure promotion criteria is created through a waiver is the same thing that would apply here as well.
All right, I'm with you.
Okay.
Okay.
We have struck in entirety the language in 2511, the type of payment for assigned duties. All right, this is following our conversation from our last discussion. In one of the things I think it's important to keep in mind in this is that, you know, the reason we're bringing this to our table, our goal is to help stop limit like the litigation over this issue and to resolve it at the table, right? You know, Justin, if need be, can certainly discuss that more. But like I just have one copy of this. But this is Denise Siebert is the dean who's overseeing. This is filed at step two, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's been no grievance ruling on this, but they agreed to wait until June of this year to see if this could be resolved via the contract before moving forward. So,
okay.
In addition to that, because we can open up, let's see, where is it? Maybe that's, you might just if you skip over a couple pages. We've included striking of that language for 9, right? We can open this on mutual agreement. This is just in the extra compensation appointments. It's just that last sentence that are subject to the provisions of section 25.9, types of payment for assigned duties, right? So that's just referencing what's now 25.11, voted to strike. Right?
Okay.
And we have also included reincluded what you guys put forward for the inversion. I think that's a great element. I went back. It was 2015 was the last time that we used this in the contract. I reread the initial language, and we actually didn't use any language we didn't use discipline or department. So it's not that there was a change. It's just clarifying language that was brought in.
Okay.
I
asked how it was implemented. I was told by discipline, because. I was told that back in, I guess, 2015, we were hiring people in according to discipline.
Hmm.
In other words, we were looking at the OSU to determine what the starting salary should be.
Mm-hmm.
And since that's all disciplines,
right,
we were actually If I'm not saying for the record that there is any compression or inversion in the system, at the University of Florida, or ever has
You're breaking
been.
Up. You're breaking up. There's,
but yeah. If there was, it might have been caused by the fact that we were hiring in per discipline at a higher rate than some people would have been originally hired. Mm. So that's why I'm told in 2015 when they put that. But we're still in the position that if you think that department unit makes more sense because it's a more formal definition that captures a subpopulation cleaner, we're willing to do that.
Well, I think, as we know, there was a sequence of, there were multiple applications, right, that were done, right? And so I think perhaps the one that they're referencing is the one that was the more complicated one that included compression as well. Because there wouldn't be... In this inversion application, it's all internally based, right? The triggers are all based on the individual faculty, right? Not outside criteria. So that probably wouldn't have a lot of relevance.
I can see that people could, there would be less certainty of the subpopulation we're looking at with discipline than with department. Because everyone's in a department or a unit, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I found one additional thing that we probably want to strike. One of the things, and Mike, you guys brought this to our attention in our last salary increase, is this phrase about tendering a resignation prior to the effective date of a wage increase. One of the effects that we unintended effects, and you guys brought this to our attention, was if someone says, I'm going to retire next year, and then they're in perfectly good standing, and then they don't get that raise, that affects their retirement, right? Mm-hmm. So in addition to the three elements that you've outlined, we're proposing that this be struck as well, right? So that it's in line with what we did previously. I also, just to get some numbers associated with this increase, I went back and looked at our... the public records request about when all this was distributed initially. Last time when we did this increase, the cap was actually a little bit higher. It was 8,000 rather than 6,000. We're okay with this 6,000 cap right here. It was distributed, 26 people were affected. The salary outlay was 123,519, right? So I think that it's gonna be most likely less than that in this, because we've, especially in one of the non-business, non-engineering, non-sciences, inversion has been resolved, right? So I think that gives us a sense of what sort of the ballpark expenditures are going to be for this this proposal, which is something to keep in mind.
Okay. I don't have a cost on that.
Mm-hmm. That's why we brought it.
Yeah.
The as I said a second ago, the Article 9 is an extension of the 2511. One new proposal that we've added earlier in the session, we had the conversation about the tuition remission, right? The free tuition credit. We initially had proposed looking at doing it like a sick leave structuring. You guys said that wouldn't necessarily work with the Florida statutes. So we've included a proposal that would. To maintain our current structure and just increase that benefit from 6 into 9. Okay, so that it would increase the tuition benefit for dependents or faculty. Now we would be fine, of course. We don't. The vast majority of the times that this benefit is utilized is for a dependent of some kind. An individual faculty do take classes, right, and do utilize this, but certainly it wouldn't be at a 9-hour per semester rate, right? So if the university wanted to limit the amount that the individual faculty member could use for his or her own participation, that would be fine. The benefits of this is that, these things also help us with our metrics, help retain good faculty, help move people through to on current graduation rates as well. So we think there's a lot of institutional benefit as well as faculty benefit to this. The last, we're willing to pull back the language that change that we had proposed in Article 3. We think that there's other paths that we can resolve this. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk some, are there any questions on any of those?
I don't think so. I've been asking them as we go along.
Okay. We're willing to pull back the language we've proposed on Article 3 and recognize that the university has an interest just structurally in keeping that. The practical effect is you know, we're moving into full book next year. I'm certainly out of any kind of release time or anything, you know, and we're working, which would also affect summertime, right? And so, you know, all of us are on 9-month contracts, right, rather than 12-month contracts. So what we can either sign an MOU that would lift, as the previous MOU did, lift those requirements for 2 years, right? We would be willing to agree to say that we won't propose any new changes within that 2-year lifted period to that subsection of Article 3. And we believe that we can, if we have a little bit of this kind of buffer, right, we believe that we can get our positions aligned correctly, so we wouldn't have to address that most likely, you know, again in the near future.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions about any of the articles that we received? Okay. I think it's probably time for us to take a caucus, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. Is that, anyone feel that way? Mm-hmm. Where do we do that?
There's that little conference
room
around
the hall
next door.
Yeah,
there was somebody. There was somebody sitting in there a minute ago. Lastly, one quick thing. The only other thing connected to this memorandum here's a copy of our previous memorandum. Right, it's just the same language. Here, the language says that that the collective bargaining agreement will not be enforced during academic years 2017-18 and 2018-19. If the university's understanding of the intent of this is that following this 2-year period, basically in the fall, that everyone would get a fresh start, right, on their 4-year clock, then we wouldn't have to sign an MOU.
Yeah, I don't.
If that's not the intent of the
process.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Otherwise, we can sign the MOU.
We'll respond to all this.
Okay.
All right. Guess I'm going to